Hey, what a weekend for the Razorbacks. Basketball team wins the SEC tournament. They're going to the NCAAs to play Hawaii on Thursday. You had the track team win a national championship here in town. And, oh, by the way, there was a big baseball series. The Razorbacks beat Mississippi State 2 of 3. Mississippi State was number 3 at the time. Arkansas was number 6 at the time. I think we're going to get the new polls probably while we're recording here. Here it is right here. Arkansas fell to 7. Explain to me how that happened.
Oh, I saw a poll where we were 4th.
In the coaches poll, Arkansas fell to 7. I don't understand that at all. Mississippi State's number 6. The coaches, they must have had their eyes closed this weekend. But anyway, big series win for Arkansas over Mississippi State. I thought Mississippi State, Bubba, was as advertised. Like, their hitters were really good. They had a guy who's hitting over 400 in the 9-hole, and he's setting the tone and a lot of times setting the table for those, you know, those guys they have at the top of the order. I mean, you think about the game where Arkansas loses, Ace Reese, he has 5 RBI out of the 2-hole. Well, it's because of what the guys in like the 8-9-1 spots are doing to, you know, set him up. And in both of those cases, it was the nine guy and the leadoff guy that got on base with 2 outs, and then Reese drove him home with a home run and a double. But man, their pitching is good, their hitting is good, and Arkansas beat them. And I didn't think Arkansas really played its best baseball. Yeah. And so to me, you think about the Razorbacks and what does that weekend mean for them? Because I've had some people ask me that in the last day or so. And to me, it's like it shows me that they're a good team, but they have a much higher ceiling, I think, than they've shown yet. And we'll see whether or not that they hit that ceiling. But when you beat a team that's as good as Mississippi State, and I thought Mississippi State played pretty well this weekend, you beat them and you're not playing your best, I think that tells you a lot about your team.
Yeah, I think so, Matt. I think if you look at their hitters, like you're talking about Chance in the 9-hole, and the guy's just a good hitter. You can't hardly strike him out. Mm-hmm. You got Teal in the leadoff spot. And the thing I notice about him is the way he sits pitches, like against Gibbler, Fisher. He sits off speed a lot. And you could tell by the way he took the fastballs, he's sitting off speed, or take those borderline breaking balls. Up and down the lineup, their guys just had a good approach. Their righties against Dietz backed off the plate, looked like they were protecting against the cutter. And then Ryder saw that, and he started going more back door with them, and they couldn't reach it from where they were standing. So it was neat to watch a good catcher, a good pitcher work against a really good lineup.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fun to watch. I was impressed with the guys. And, you know, you look, I heard a lot of questions about, well, we were hitting this with runners in scoring position. Yeah, we didn't get that big hit, but look what we did Friday. How many times we got the runner on, we got him over, we got him in. Mm-hmm. And that's – I like to see that. As much as I love to see a double in the gap or a ball go off the scoreboard, to see a team execute like that, because a lot of times we get that runner at second with nobody out, he stays at second the whole inning. I just like the way we manufactured runs. It shows that we can score in a lot of different ways. And I thought it was awesome. And I thought it was a gutsy move by Dave to mix up the lineup like he did. I mean, think about it. We're playing one of the best teams in the country, and he puts a guy at first base that never played first base before. Yeah. But I think you got to do that. I think sometimes it's good to shake things up, and whether it's just a wake-up call to the team or just mix up the chemistry for a game and kind of change the attitude and the mojo in the dugout and in the clubhouse. And I thought it worked. I thought Dave did a masterful job of kind of managing through that game. And I don't know. I thought it was awesome. It's a fun weekend. And Pompey, look, we'll talk about it in a minute, but I hate that Cole Gibbler gave up the home run there, but I think that was huge for the weekend. Mm-hmm. I think Pompey coming up and doing what he did, I mean, I think the baseball gods were there and they were shining down on him. I got a chance to talk to TJ during BP, and you know what? He was so upbeat and he was excited, and he's like, look, he said, I had a good week of BP. I did some tee work. I flattened out my swing. I feel really good. And to see it go in, when you see a guy work that hard all week and then go in and do what he did, and I think the fact that he took the way he took the 2-2 slider got him that 3-2 fastball.
Yeah.
Because he took it. You can tell how a hitter takes a pitch is how he's going to swing at it. Mm-hmm. You know, and he took it really confident. And so the guy's like, ooh, I don't want to throw that. I want to hang it. He'll hit it a mile. So he got him a fastball and he crushed it. I loved it.
Hey, today's baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business Serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976, just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts, no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. I thought Friday night's game was offensively for Arkansas. Like, they have their limitations offensively this year. For them to have success, getting the leadoff guy is so important. And in five, they scored in five innings in that game. And in four of those innings, they got the leadoff guy. Yeah. One of them was Pompey in the home run. You know, that's a little bit different story. But I think the first three runs they scored, it was a leadoff single, a leadoff double, and then Aloy got on with a leadoff error on a ball that he actually, you know, he put in play, you know, pretty hard and made it tough on the defender. And so, like, that's the key for them. It's, you know, especially if you can get like a leadoff double.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes it a lot easier to move that guy over. Like, Souza, I think he's the one who had the leadoff double and he scored. Well, he doubles, you know, ground out to the right side, ground out to the right side, and he comes home. And, you know, it's not the prettiest way to play baseball, but it's effective when you've got a team that can pitch as well as Arkansas can.
Yeah, when you're facing a guy like McFarland, what's his name? McPherson.
Yeah, Ryan McPherson.
You're facing a guy like that. You got to take your runs when you can get them. And, man, I look at those. Their three starters are really good.
And they're all sophomores. So yeah. They'll be back next year.
McPherson, Valinkas, Duke Stone. They're all three really good. Mm-hmm. Valinkas is really good.
Yes.
He didn't make hardly any mistakes the whole game. Really impressed with him. But same with McPherson throwing 96, 97. Doesn't walk anyone. I thought Stone did a real good job mixing his pitches, but to battle like we did, and I said on the air to Phil, I said, look, if we can get in their bullpen, we got a chance, and if it comes down to a battle of the bullpens, we're going to win the series because we have some studs in our bullpen. I mean, it was fun. It was fun watching. You know, it was fun watching two good head coaches battle back and forth. There were a lot of mix and matches, a lot of matchup. Brian O'Connor, he played a lot of matchups, and I thought Dave did a really good job on Saturday's game with Fisher, you know, and Eaves and just a Coyle and bringing in Kircher and McIlvain and just getting just the right matchups to get through that game.
I thought Van Horn managed his bullpen better in the decisive game I don't know if Mississippi State didn't have anybody hot, like when they brought in, was it Billingsley, who just couldn't get an out at all, but you know, you got to be able, I would think that you got to have somebody up there in a tight game like that. It's 3-3, just in case, or maybe it's 4-3 when he came in, but just in case it doesn't go well with him. And then you think about the flip side. I don't know if it was the seventh, eighth inning. It was the eighth inning where Arkansas, they're playing the matchups. Coyle faces the left-hander. Jackson Kircher comes in. And I didn't think it was a bad job pitching at all by him, Bubba. It's just, you know, he got the head 0-2 and then, guy makes a play, gets a hit against him, and then you bring in Ethan McIlvain, and I just thought Arkansas did a really good job, even in the bottom of the eighth inning when they bring in Landon Schaefer, and you know, have him pinch run. They bring in Carson Brumbaugh. He can't get a bunt down, but they've got a guy at first who they feel comfortable with to steal a base. I felt like Arkansas, whether it's the players making the plays or what, it looks like they managed the game better at the end than Mississippi State did in a decisive game. But, boy, it was really fun to watch, you know, the back and forth.
Yeah, no, it was. And, you know, seeing the Schaefer, you know, the stolen base, you know, I've got times on the guy up there. You know, he's around a 1-4. So, I mean, it's not a gimme. You got to try to pick the right pitch. You got to get a good jump. I thought Schaefer did a really good job.
And it's his first time to play in a college game. It's not just his first time to play in an SEC game or he hadn't played in 3 weeks or whatever. Like, this guy has not played in a game in college. And you bring him in that situation, holy cow. I mean, that was – I actually kind of thought – Landon, and I asked this after the game. I said, I thought Landon Schaefer was redshirting. I didn't realize that you were going to use him there. And he's like, no, we've had a plan for him. And, you know, they bring him in that moment. But if you watch the video of Landon crossing home plate after Mike Anew's RBI single, he is fired up. Yeah. Can you imagine what that, you know, little – 2-3 minute sequence must have been like for him coming into the game, first game, you're trying to knock off a really good team, rubber game, and then you score the go-ahead run.
No, it's awesome. And What about the feeling when he looks over to Nate and Nate gives him the steal sign? He's like, yeah. I mean, you know you don't want to get thrown out there. You got to get that back. Because
that's a little bit different than stealing against Springdale Harbor.
Yeah, it's a little different. I think he got a good jump though, good slide.
Yeah.
And how about the 0-2 hit by Micah New to right field? First of all, I was watching. So that's a one hopper to the right fielder.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually, I mean, as I played a lot of right field, that's a right fielder's dream, a mm-hmm. one hopper in that situation. I thought,
you can really gear up your throw to home plate with that kind of ball.
I think he, I don't know if he looked up or what, but it clanked off his glove. And it was, I'm glad, but I was watching Bobby and it looked like Bobby was sitting mm-hmm. and landing all the way. I mean, there was no hesitation there. He's going to make him throw him out at home plate. But I thought that was awesome. It was a great piece of hit, and it was a slider down and away, and I thought Micah took a great swing at it. And then, you know, then after that, another 0-2 hit by Pompey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought it was awesome. They had the runners moving. The runner from the second baseman's going to cover the bag, therefore the ball got by him. You know, if he's not covering the bag there, it might be a double play. But I just thought that was another big moment. Just there were a lot of things in that game. And if you're like a true baseball fan and you really watch the game and see what's going on the field, I mean, that's fun baseball to watch.
Mm-hmm. I thought I'd be interested. What do you think the best hit of the weekend was? The one that stands out to me, and it's very – and I think Arkansas may have scored during this inning. Reese Robinette gets a two-strike pitch. Maybe it's a 3-2 pitch in on the hands, a fastball – and takes it up the middle. I was really impressed with that hit from him. But, I mean, you could go with any number of – you got 115-mile-an-hour exit velocity home run by Zach Stewart. You got the home run on the 3-2 pitch by T.J. Pompey that wins the game on Friday night. Micah New, T.J. Pompey had a big single during that eighth-inning rally. And, I mean, for as little of hitting as there was, so to speak, in the series – it felt like there were a lot of really good hits, if that makes sense.
I think so. And just like I said, the way Pompey took the 2-2 slider got him the 3-2 fastball Friday, I think, was Stewart. So the guy got 2-0 count, throws him a fastball top of the zone, he fouls it back. And then the 3-1 count, he got another fastball belt high, and he was all over, just barely missed it. I think I kind of played out in my mind. I'm like, okay, he just missed that 3-1 fastball. Is he going to come back 3-2? And he throws him a 3-2 changeup and leaves it in, and he puts a dent in the building. That ball was smoked. Mm-hmm. I mean, 115. I think TrackMan cheated him. I think it showed it at 430-something. But maybe what's crazy, it was 18-degree launch angle. So, yeah. I mean, that's a rocket.
Yes.
And there's got to be a dent in the building, but that ball was smoked. But, you know, it's just funny. It's awesome watching the matchup between the hitter and the pitcher and kind of the mm-hmm. chess match. You know, and I talk about Moneyball all the time. It's like a hand in blackjack. You know, every pitch your odds change, just like mm-hmm. every card in blackjack, your odds change. And how you either take that pitch or how you swing at that pitch affects the next pitch a lot of times. And I just thought it was really I thought it was awesome.
I kept telling people in the press box, I said, if Stewart with his bat speed gets a hold of one of these pitches from McPherson with the velocity that he's throwing with, it's going to be an impressive exit velocity. But I thought it would be a fastball. And that wasn't – it was a changeup, or was it a
– it was a changeup.
Changeup that he got. Change, yeah, 3-2 changeup that he hit. And so, I mean, to put 115 on a changeup, and I know it's a – I mean, it's a high-velocity changeup, but I thought that, you know, if you're going to see one of those big numbers, it might be on one of those 97, 98 fastballs that McPherson was throwing.
So that goes to show you that should be a lesson learned. Don't get beat by your third-best pitch. Mm. You know, he's got a good fastball. He's got a good slider. I would say his changeup, you know, now the hitters might disagree with him. He's got a good changeup. I think that's his third best pitch. I go back to the World Series years ago. Mark Waller's giving up a home run to Jim Leyritz on a splitty when he had a 100-mile-an-hour fastball and a nasty slider. Yeah. He goes to a splitty. Leyritz hits it out. You don't ever get beat with your third best pitch.
And Stewart had trouble with the fastball. I mean, he was
late.
Three or four times, he couldn't catch up with it.
But I do think the swing he took at the 3-1 one, you know, I think McPherson's like, ooh, I better not throw him three fastballs in a row.
Mm. It was an impressive hit. Stewart, he is He is really impressive. Hey, when it comes to your game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eggland's Best delivers more of the nutrition you need. They've got six times more vitamin D, 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. And score now with Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. For more information, egglandsbest.com. Look at starting pitching for Arkansas. Gabe Gackel was effective. It kind of felt like it was – remember we talked about Gabe Gackel, like he's not going to overwhelm you, and he didn't overwhelm Mississippi State at all. They got eight hits off of him. I think he gave up three walks. They scored a couple of runs against him. But he is effective with base runners, and it kind of goes back to that that pass that he has as a reliever where, you know, he's not – he doesn't get real tense in those moments where – you know, it looked like Mississippi State might be able to not necessarily break the game open, but in a low-scoring game, you know, get a big inning and, or, you know, even a two-run inning or something. I know they got one two-run inning against him, but they didn't get more than that against him, and I thought he managed it pretty well.
I think he did. You know, I think something that was real important in that game was, you know, Teal leads off the game, gets on base, and Helfrich hosed him, stolen base attempt.
Yeah,
I mean, wasn't even close. I mean, Ryder, an absolute cannon right on the bag, threw him out. And if you notice, that kind of shut their running game down for the weekend. They didn't really do a whole lot after that. And then, you know, when Cahill missed the ball in right field, you know, and that put runners at, what, second and third with one out. I thought Gackel bowed his neck right there and got back-to-back strikeouts. I thought that first inning was huge because that could have easily gone the other way. First of all, if Ryder didn't throw him out, you know, who knows? I mean, they're just – I just think that first inning, you know, could have gone a really bad direction early.
And we've seen go bad for Gackel.
But I thought it was impressive that Gackel bowed his neck like that because, you know, Cahill did such a great job. He went back. He did everything right except catch the ball.
Yeah.
He went back and found the fence.
Did it look like he was too concerned with where the fence was?
Honestly, I watched it multiple times because I see Cahill a lot of times catch a fly ball like this. I've got young
players.
For people
who are listening, you're talking about.
Yeah, elbow up like this. Like, it changes your line of sight if you catch a fly ball like this. And so I wanted to go back and see, okay, did he get back and try to do that? But he didn't. He had his elbow down. He kind of turned his wrist, which is what a lot of young outfielders do for some reason. He kind of did that, and it clinked off his glove. I think he just missed it. I think the wind. You know, there was just a lot going on. But he does catch a lot of fly balls like this, which I don't like. I like elbow down right here, right off of this ear. And get your other hand out of the way. You know, we don't catch with two hand anymore. But, yeah, I think he just missed it. Felt bad for him. But I thought it was awesome the way Gackel responded right there.
I made the comment when Zach Stewart was not in the field the next day, I said his groin must be pretty bad pulled for him. Not to be in right field, you know, with the way that just when they hit the ball to Cahill Aloy, like there was an inning fly out during one of those games on Saturday where I think Mississippi State had a couple of guys in scoring position. You just hold your breath at this point any time the ball goes out there to him. I think when Stewart is healthy, it's likely, or at least I feel like it's likely, that he's going to be their primary right fielder because of the defense. It's a position that he knows. And his position that Cahill Aloy is still trying to learn.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, he's an athlete. Hopefully he'll figure it out. I mean, the wind's been tough. It's been all kinds of different winds. But you still got to catch those balls.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, there was another one that he fielded, and he slipped and fell. Guy got an extra base on it. I mean, stuff like that happens. And you feel like, when you're struggling a little bit, the ball finds you. We always say that all the time. It's baseball. If something's not going right, the ball finds you. If you're a third baseman that gets put in the game in the ninth inning for defensive purposes, the ball's going to get hit to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things about the game of baseball that's awesome.
Yeah, the ball found Carter Rutenbar on a play where, you know, I think if it's a different first baseman, he probably charges it and gets it before that third hop, and it goes foul.
Yeah, that little one. That's a tough read because where he's coming in, he's right in line with the bag because he kind of came in at an angle. So I don't know if he was confused where the first base bag, if he should. I think he did. He got caught in between. If he feels it, you know, what, 8 inches closer to home plate, it's fair.
Yep.
I thought he made a good play to his right. He might have gone a little too far to his right, but he made a good play and was able to get the flip to Gackle. So
it was a little shaky there with him. Like they said before the game, that he hadn't played first base, I think, since maybe his junior year of high school, and he hadn't worked on it since the Stetson game on Monday. Like, that's when they started working with him at first base. So, I mean, I think it was expected to be kind of a shaky moment. And then as soon as Arkansas got the lead in the late innings, that's when you saw them go to, you know, the defensive alignment and put Pompey at third and Robinette at first. And I think that's going to be their everyday alignment as long as Pompey is able to put the bat on the ball. And how about this, Bubba? If you look at SEC-only stats right now, I had them pulled up a minute ago. Well, I've lost it. But anyway, long story short, if you look at SEC-only stats, how about Nolan Souza and TJ Pompey are the top two starters or the top two hitters for Arkansas? Souza's hitting 500-something. I think Pompey's hitting 444. Like, who would have thought that after the first weekend against one of the best pitching staffs in the league?
Well, remember our last podcast? You know, I took all this and said you could throw all this out.
Right. And then you flip it around, Camden Koshal's batting 091.
Now, wait. To Cam's defense, he hit the crap out of a couple balls. He hit a ball 105, 30 degrees at the scoreboard. Usually that thing's three-quarters of the way up the scoreboard.
Yeah.
I mean, he squared up a few balls. He pieced a couple up that just didn't go anywhere. But that one ball off the bat, I'm like, even with the wind, that thing gone. And the outfielder got behind it and had to come in to catch it. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, but he did hit some balls hard. He's some good at bats.
Yeah, I don't mean to disparage Cam, but it's just like you got – like Cam has been – maybe their best hitter this year.
Yeah.
And he goes 091, and you still beat Mississippi State, and it's because in large part of the work that they're getting done at the bottom of the order.
Yeah, you're right. That's huge. But there's a big difference in a Monday night game versus Stetson or a Friday night game at Ball Marker versus Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball's a mental game, and some dudes just step up when the lights are the brightest. And I think Sousa's a guy like that. I think Pompey's a guy like that. I really do. I think he plays, not that he doesn't try when you're playing Stetson, I'm just saying it's a different mindset. I mean, I loved facing the other teams. Like, if I knew I was facing like a first round bonus baby, I got pumped up. If I was facing just some midweek chump that I never heard of, I didn't get the same vibe. It's just weird. It's something that's inside you mentally. Now, you got to play the same against everybody, but I don't know. You can say it all day, but it's different, man. When the Friday night lights are on and your SEC play, I think some guys just get it done.
In the finale, Pompey had three or four really good defensive plays.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it showed you like why you want him in the lineup, because you know what he can do defensively is among the best that they have.
I like Dave's quote about the soft liner, because Pompey, he misread it. I think it was like 80 off the bat, whatever it was.
78.
Was it 78?
It was 78. I was really surprised. I thought it was harder than that.
And he jumped, but I love DVH because he did the Michael Jordan reference instead of – I'd have lost some respect for Dave if he'd have said LeBron James.
Yeah.
I would have lost some respect.
Well, he's old school. He's old school.
I can't stand LeBron James. Yeah. I had this debate with some of my high school
players. Maybe
he could have said Dr. J. That would have been a good one, too. Scottie Pippen. I don't know. I was a big Pippen
fan. You're talking about the debate, the LeBron-Jordan debate?
Yeah, I have it with some of my high school kids, and they think that LeBron is the greatest thing ever. I'm like, no, they don't play I don't even like basketball. Hmm. But I did love the Chicago Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pippen and
Jordan. Who couldn't love that? It's so much fun to watch.
And they don't play defense anymore. Back then, they actually played defense. So Jordan would score 100 a game in today's game.
Well, and I mean, like in the fouls, we had Joe Klein up at our sports club a few weeks back, and he said, you know, what's called, you know, he's like, we didn't have flagrant fouls. He goes, you got flagrant one, flagrant two. He said, what we were doing then was like flagrant five in the lane.
Exactly.
So it's a totally different game. That was the last quote that Dave had that night, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And then he stood up from the table and he goes, and he looks at the three players in the back. He goes, look at these guys. They probably don't even know who Michael Jordan is.
Oh,
so, but they did. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard not to know that. I thought Hunter Dietz got squeezed on Saturday by the plate umpire, Matt Wilbanks. But, he had an okay outing. It was just that one inning where he just And again, I think that if you've got a different umpire behind the plate, it may not end up being a high pitch inning or a high run inning like what Mississippi State had against him, and it was three runs. But he just didn't get the calls that he's gotten in some other. I didn't think he pitched bad. Mm-hmm. I just think it was a matter of it was a really, really tight zone.
I go back to the 3-2 pitch to Teal. Helfrich caught it and started to go to the dugout, and they called it a ball. That would have ended the inning. And then there was a 2-2 pitch to Ace Reese. I want to say it was a fastball away, something away, and I thought it was a strike.
Yeah.
Now, they SEC's in their genius move, they take the strike zone away, so you don't see the actual K zone.
Oh, I know.
Which is
it's really frustrating. Well, and you know why they did this, don't you?
Well, I would assume because it's arguments from the coaches.
Yes, yeah. Because the coaches have the iPads mm-hmm. in the dugout. They don't want the coaches running out with the iPad and saying, "Look here, this is what you just missed." Yeah. But I mean, you can be people can be adults, and I think that at some point in time, the SEC is going to reverse course on that, and they're going to pivot on it, and they're going to allow the strike zone to be shown on the TrackMan in game. It's just, it's like everything else. Instead of getting to the point that everybody knows you're going to go to, you got to go through like two or three or four or five steps to get there.
Well, just look, being an ump's hard. Especially, I think it's hard to call pitches with Hunter Dietz. That ball, he throws cutters at 90. He throws cutters at 84, 85. Mm-hmm. Some are more horizontal. Some have more depth. Guys like that are hard to call. Fastball rides. I thought the 2-2 pitch before the home run was a strike to Ace Reese. And then the home run was 96 miles an hour. And what's crazy, Matt, with the wind, we're already talking about Kojel's ball, 105 into the wind. That ball was hit 96. And it was hit at the perfect spot in left field. If it was hit 15 feet more towards center field, mm-hmm. it doesn't go out. But he was hit at the perfect trajectory where the ball just carried into the hog pen. That ball should not have gone out. Of course, I did see, I think it was Helfrich last year, hit a home run 86 miles an hour off the bat.
Tennessee game?
Yeah, just like a little lob wedge into the hog pen. Yeah, it was hit 86, and it just kept going. So, I mean, it works both ways, I guess. Yeah. But I felt really bad for Dietz because, I talked to the SEC broadcast guys before the game. They're asking questions about it. And I said, look, you're going to see a dude that looks like a big league mm-hmm. lefty. Mm-hmm. I said, when he's on. And I said, even when he's not on, you can tell his stuff's really good. And I talked to Berkey after the game, and he's like, yeah, I see what you mean. There were a couple innings there where his stuff was good.
Well, I mean, his first eight outs mm-hmm. were really impressive. Dumb. I think he had one base runner during that time. And his fastball was as effective, I thought, as we've seen it, at least in those first couple of innings.
I thought it was cool, the adjustment they made. Helfrich looked like he made an adjustment because you could tell those righties were off the plate and they were defending against that cutter in. Mm. I think they were protecting against it, and they kind of flipped their game plan and went away. And I don't think the Mississippi State hitters made an adjustment.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good.
You know what I mean? And Dietz and Fisher both, they fought. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like even though it wasn't going well for them, they fought longer into the game than maybe, I don't know how I'm trying to say this, but they fought to where maybe they got an inning or two innings or whatever a little bit later into the game than maybe some pitchers would. And, I think that's a credit because – again, you think about that last game, they had to have as much of their bullpen as they, as much of their top line bullpen guys available as they could to be able to finish that out.
Yeah, I thought Colin threw some really good pitches, and after that, after that inning, he came back.
And he should have been out of that inning with one run because Arkansas couldn't get a double play turned.
Yeah, we got to turn that double play. That's got to be turned. But little things like that, I think, will eventually clean up. I think Sousa's arm's continuing to get better.
Yeah.
I think the defense is going to eventually be there.
That middle infield where they flipped basically – well, they didn't flip it because Sousa's not been playing short, but where they moved Kojel to short and they moved Sousa to second. What did you think about that? Especially Kojel – because we've seen Sousa at second base quite a bit. It's the first time we've seen Kojel at short. First time he'd played that position since high school.
Well – so I said something to Kojel during BP. I'm like, hey, shortstop. I said, sweet. I said, how long has it been? And he just played it up. He's like, come on, man. Two-time Gatorade Player of the Year or something, USA player. I forget how he said it. He said, I've played short my whole life.
Yeah.
And he's just so confident and chill about everything. I'm telling you, whatever that Gregorian chant he listens into, it gets his mind right because he is so chill. He made a couple of good plays. There was one play in particular. It was a hard hit ball to his right, and he could have taken one step and backhanded it, had to plant and throw. But he took three steps, got around the ball, created an angle, mm-hmm. and made a good hard throw. And I don't remember who hit it, who was running down the line, but that showed his instincts right there. Just that one play to me is like, wow, he knows what he's doing. Because a lot of it's reading how hard's the ball hit, who's running down the line. Yeah, and I thought it was a good play. I mean, who knows how long he's going to stay at short? May stay there for a while, but I thought he did a really good job.
I'm really impressed with Arkansas's bullpen. Yeah, I keep saying this. Like, I mean, you think about, you know, who are the top line bullpen arms? Well, Steele Eaves is one. Ethan McElvain, obviously. Cole Gibler is in that conversation. Parker Coyle is one. I think that you could Tate McGuire is a top line bullpen arm too, and you know of those guys. I mean, I'm looking at their stats right here. Steele Eaves hasn't given up an earned run in 14 innings. Ethan McElvain hasn't given up an earned run in 9 1/3 innings. Coyle, he's got a 3.48 ERA. Gibbler's got a 1.53 ERA. Tate McGuire's got a 3.52 ERA. I mean, this is really impressive stuff, what they're doing out of the bullpen. They're not walking guys. I mean, Eaves, what's this, 17 strikeouts, 2 walks. Gibbler, 18 strikeouts, 5 walks. McElvain, the walks were the problem for him at Vanderbilt. 15 strikeouts, 3 walks for him. Coyle, we know he's a strike thrower, 16 strikeouts, 3 walks. I mean, like, they're getting just consistently really high-level play out of their bullpen. And I think when you piggyback that with the fact that their starters, even if they're not dominant every time, for the most part, they've been effective. Boy, they're an awfully good pitching staff.
No, they are. And I know Cole Gibber probably won't listen to this, but I'd want to apologize to him because after the game, they're waiting to do their press conference up there. And, you know, I asked him about the 1-0 pitch, and I knew what the pitch was. I knew it was fastball.
You're talking about the home run. The Mississippi State home run hit to tie.
And, you know, I asked him about that, and you know, and I don't ever second guess. I think Helfrich does a great job. But if you're in that situation, Matt, you're a hitter, runner at first base, you're the tying runner at the plate, 9th inning, 1-0 count. You are trying to. I'm sorry, guys will say, well, I was just trying to put a good swing on it. BS. You're trying to tie the game right there. You got a 1-0 count. You're going to cheat. If he'd have thrown a changeup, he'd have spun himself in the ground or cued it off the end of the bat. But he was sitting dead ready, cheated, and he hit it. I feel bad that I ask. He pitched his butt off, but what do? I go ask him about that. So he's sitting there, and I go and sit beside him. I said, you know what? My bad, Cole. You just pitch your ass off. Without you, we don't win this game. Mm-hmm. You know, you shut them down. And you know, here I ask you about the one pitch. So I felt bad because, mm-hmm. I mean, the guy really did pitch his butt off. But, you know, it was just one pitch.
Yeah.
And hindsight's 20/20. If you throw a changeup, you speed his bat up, he hits it over, then you're like, well, why don't you throw a fastball there? You know, so you can look at it. It's you can what if it to death. But I was impressed with McElvain coming in throwing 98. I mean, just – that he looks like a guy. I love the look, by the way.
He looks like a psycho.
And it was one of my favorite interviews. We actually talked for like 10 minutes before I even started the interview. Mm-hmm. Somehow we got to talking about hunting, bow hunting. And I love the dude. Yeah. And, you know, I asked him, is it okay if I ask you about, you know, Vandy? Because to me, he's not a Vandy boy.
Right.
There's nothing about him that looks Vandy, acts Vandy, talks Vandy.
Well, not anymore. I think when they're at Vanderbilt, they kind of like – it's almost like Corbin's a military aficionado, and so I think everybody there, you know, they're expected to have clean cut, you know, clean shaven, and so like they all kind of. But man, it's weird. Like you see him, look at his pictures whenever he was at Vanderbilt last year, and look at his pictures at Arkansas this year. He doesn't look like the same guy. I was telling somebody earlier today. It's like Waylon Jennings between his third and his fourth album. You know, when he changed record labels, and you know he goes from being this clean cut guy who's wearing a suit and tie to, you know, the Waylon Jennings that we all know. Like, that's kind of what you're getting with Ethan McElvain. And I wonder if maybe some of the success that he's having here is the fact that he's free to just be himself and express himself.
Well, he said it. He, as soon as he got here, he knew he, this is where he belonged. Mm. I mean, you, I'm a country boy. There is no way in the world I could have gone to Vandy and played and done all that. And I can't picture McIlvain going down between innings and doing all that choreographed crap they do between innings. I can't imagine him being a part of that. And if he was, in the back of his mind, he's probably thinking, what in the hell am I doing here? So I got to get out of here.
Anti-calisthenics.
Yeah. So
Ethan McIlvain.
I mean, it's just, it's not even calisthenics. It's all choreographed crap. And it drives me, I gag every time I see it. It just goes right through. It's kind of like the Tennessee dude slamming the bat.
Hold on. I want to ask you about this.
Okay.
Let me tell everybody real quick. Southern Loft believes that your home should reflect your unique personality. That's when they offer a wide variety of stylish furniture pieces that are perfect for any taste. Whether you're looking for a new sofa for the living room, a sleek dining table for your kitchen, they've got just what you need. When you're looking for that piece of furniture that reflects you, visit Southern Loft at 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville or call 479-856-6100. For people who don't know, the Tennessee video that Bubba is referencing, Tennessee's down a run, two outs in the ninth inning at Georgia, deepest left field fence in maybe America, but certainly in the SEC. It's like 350 feet down the line in left. And this guy he thinks it's a home run. I mean, he's slamming the bat, dugout's running out to him. And the left fielder makes a great catch at the wall. I don't know if he brought it back or if he caught it, you know, right at the wall. I'm not sure. But Georgia wins. And so you got this video of this Tennessee guy slamming his bat down. And when I saw that, Bubba, I got to tell you something really funny. I saw it last night, and I was just about to text you, have you seen this? And right at that time, you tweeted the video. I was like, okay, he's seen it. I was waiting for you to see that because I knew you'd have a response.
I couldn't believe it. I don't care if the guy catches the ball or doesn't catch the ball. You don't bat slam like that unless that damn thing goes 500 feet. Yeah. I mean, that was unbelievable.
But the thing is, in that little bandbox that Tennessee plays in, that's probably 40 feet over the wall.
Yeah, it's a bomb. But I hate it. And I didn't know you could do a bat slam like that and not get ejected, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, which game's over, so I don't guess it matters.
Maybe he's ejected.
But that
for
poor
Tuesday.
Kid better get in the weight room, or he better do something. I go apologize to God. I don't know. But that that was just a really bad look for Tennessee. And it doesn't surprise me. Yeah. You know, I try not to look at comments, because sometimes you go down those wormholes, you start reading people's comments, mm-hmm. and they get out of hand. But there were some hilarious comments. If you click on the video and just scroll down through.
There were two plays from that Tennessee-Georgia series that drew a lot of attention this weekend, the one that you're talking about. And then there was one, I don't know if it was Friday night or Saturday night, but where there's a foul ball and the Georgia guy, I think it's a Georgia first baseman, runs over to the Tennessee dugout and everybody stands their ground at the, you know, on the top step of the dugout. And I think it even hits a Tennessee guy in the head. I think the ball hits him in the head. And I think in Major League Baseball, isn't there like a right of way for the fielder? Like, you've got to evacuate the area for him to be able to make that catch at the dugout?
You can't interfere. I don't know what the official rule is there. But, I mean, it's respect that you get out of the way and you let the guy make the play. You don't try to defend him. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to look that rule up because I want to know. It's going to bug
me. I think the
today.
Rule is different in Major League Baseball than it is in college, because in college you don't have to move for the fielder.
But if the guy got hit in the head, once again, that's baseball. That's baseball gods.
Maybe he's the guy who slammed the bat down.
Could have been.
Maybe it's the
same dude. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah.
Poetic justice there.
Well, maybe that's why he slammed the bat down. He lost all of his common sense on the ball that popped up and hit him. Around the SEC this weekend, LSU, boy, they got walked off at Vanderbilt in game one, and they lose game two. I think they won game three to salvage the series or to keep from getting swept. But, the SEC is kind of weird. It's a little bit on its ear right now.
Yeah, I mean, LSU, they weren't scoring any runs. Their offense was just horrible. And then they scored some against Vandy, but then the pitching wasn't very good. They just, and I watched part of that third game, and I ended up I think I went outside to do something. I don't know. But But yeah, it was kind of a back and forth game there for a while. They get out to a big lead, then they give it up. Vandy ties it up, and then, you know, LSU ended up pulling away and winning. But yeah, just some crazy stuff in the SEC.
You look at the SEC standings right now. There's three teams who are 3-0 through one weekend. That's Kentucky, Auburn, and Florida. Texas is 2-1. OU, Georgia, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, all 2-1. And then the teams that lost the series this weekend, of course, Mississippi State, A&M, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and LSU. Missouri, Alabama, and South Carolina got swept. Arkansas goes to South Carolina this weekend. They play Northern Colorado on Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll talk a little bit about that here in just a second. But I did want to mention, did you see Arkansas State beat Southern Miss?
Yeah, saw
two
that.
Of three?
Yeah.
Arkansas State now, they are 3-2 this year against top 10 teams.
So I did, I was talking to Justin Akery this morning, and I mentioned that series because when we lost Arkansas State, everyone was just up in a roar. I'm like, hey, these guys are good. They got good players.
And anybody who's calling that an embarrassing loss or a bad – like, it's a bad loss in the fact that you lose 12-4. That's, you know, that's a bad game. But it's not an embarrassing or a bad loss. That is a really good team. And I don't know how many bids the Sun Belt will get this year. I thought they should have got three last year. I think they only got two. But they ought to get multiple bids this year. And, you know, through the first third of the season, I mean – Arkansas State certainly should be one of those teams.
Yeah, I mean, if they can stay healthy and keep doing what they're doing, I mean, they got starters that throw strikes, hitters up and down the lineup. I mean, they're a good team. You can just look at their roster, and you know, I've already talked about that. It's a different team this year, so I was happy for them to go down there and win that series because, I mean, that's a big win.
You know, and they can hit. We saw that mm-hmm. when they were here, but they can pitch. Like, yeah. I don't know what the updated stats are after the weekend, but going into the weekend, they had the number 8 ERA in the country.
I believe it. They're sinker-slider guys. They pitch contact, and, mm-hmm. I mean, they're hard to hit. They know how they keep the ball down in the zone and just get out. That's the name of the game.
Did you see, I think South Carolina had a no-hitter, like, going into the ninth inning at Florida, and they still lose a 1-0 game in 10 innings.
That's tough. Yeah. South Carolina is a tough place to play. They play well at home. So it's, I don't care what their record is. I don't think it matters in the SEC what your record is. I mean, any team can jump you on a weekend. I still go back to last year, Missouri at A&M, the most unlikely sweep mm-hmm. in SEC history, probably.
Yeah. Missouri, I think we were talking to Mark Etheridge about this last week. He said, you know, their record is good. I wonder about the schedule that they played. And, you know, they get swept on opening weekend. I don't know what that means for them. You know, they were 15-2 going into SEC play. Now they're 15-5. Northern Colorado comes in this week. They're 2-17. Like, hadn't been a good season for them. They just played, and, you know, geography obviously is what it is, but they had just played their first – home game or the home series of the season for home games over the weekend and they lost the series. So they're 2-17. They're coming on the road again. It seems like it's a good, you know, a good opportunity here for two games for Arkansas to you know, get right in some ways, and certainly an opportunity to get a lot of these pitchers on the mound who haven't been able to get into the game on the weekend. Like, you know, I saw Mark Brissy up late in one of the games against Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. He never ended up getting into the game. You know, we haven't seen Peyton Lee in a couple of weeks. I would think that, you know, maybe we see him. You think about some of these freshmen who you haven't seen, Joey Lorenzini, Jordan Martin. I've been hearing that Ty Briscoe might be able to go for Arkansas soon. He's a pitcher we haven't seen. Another freshman who I know they're excited about, a left-hander. So, double midweek is always – there's always a developmental aspect to the double midweek. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see a lot of players – maybe not 45 like we saw in the ORU game, but a lot of players who get an opportunity to play over the next couple of days.
I think so. I'm excited to see some of those guys. Hopefully we'll get to see some of the freshmen out there on the mound. You know, I think Brissy was warming up in game three, wasn't he, when McIlvain was on the mound?
Might have been.
I think he
might have also been up in game two at one point and sat back down.
But, yeah, I mean, they trust him. He's got He's got good stuff, Matt. His fastball is, what, 95, 96? He's probably got more in the tank. But it's there's something about it. It's got, like, a second gear. Guys are late on it.
Yeah.
Hides the ball well, jumps out of his hand, got good breaking ball. He doesn't pitch like a freshman. Hopefully we get to see him. And, you know, I'd still like to see Peyton Lee again. I was impressed with him in the fall, early spring. I thought he looked really good. And, you know, I had a bad outing, but against a good team.
Yeah.
So
I mean, doesn't look so bad in retrospect.
No, it really doesn't when you think back. But I want to say he hit a couple guys 0-2 and made a few mistakes that are freshman mistakes, but that happens.
Yeah, that was a good lineup at A-State.
Yeah, so you just get back out there. Hopefully we get to see some of those guys. Lorenzini, I look forward to seeing him. I feel bad he came in and gave up a home run in his only outing. But, I mean, the guy looks like a guy that's got good stuff you know, a big, tall lefty. You know, you got to love those big, tall lefties. So hopefully we'll get to see some of those guys. And I don't know, lineup-wise, what Dave will do, if he'll rest some guys. Or I saw the ERAs of some of the Northern Colorado team, the pitchers, they're not very good.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a fun couple of days to be a Razorback hitter if the wind conditions are right. I think Tuesday the wind's going to be blowing out. I feel like Wednesday it might shift and come back in, but still should be a good week.
Hopefully it warms up. Holy cow.
It's going to. I think it's going to be cold tomorrow, especially a 6 o'clock game. I don't know if they're going to move that up any or not, but Wednesday's supposed to be like 70, so it's going to warm up.
That's good. So we need it too. Reminder, our baseball podcast is sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a local shop that's been family-owned for 3 generations. They built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way. That kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident at H&R Tire and Auto. I would think that one of the next 2 games would be a time to get Ryder Helfrich off of his feet. He hasn't had I don't think there's been a game he hasn't caught this year.
I think so. And look at – did you notice Mississippi State caught 3 different guys in 3 days? I've never seen that. And they had 4 catchers. I'm down there watching batting practice, and they've got 4 catchers over there doing drills before one of the games. And I'm thinking, how does that happen? I've never seen a team travel with 4 catchers. Maybe they do. I don't know. But and with all the guys they had coming off the bench hitting 400, I'm like, I think someone really opened up their wallet for them this year, and they brought in some guys. But I feel like if you have a luxury of traveling with 4 catchers, then you're doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Van Horn made a comment to Phil Elson on one of the pregame shows. It may have been Saturdays. And he was asked about the depth of the Mississippi State bench because they had used a bunch of guys. And Dave said something to the effect of, and this wasn't verbatim, so bear with me, but it was something to the effect of, it's interesting. Let's just leave it at that. And, you know, you've heard him talk about, I think there's a little bit of a frustration. I don't know if frustration is the right word, but you know, you've heard him talk a little bit about, hey, we need more NIL. We need more, you know, funds to be able to be competitive. I think that some of that, you know, let's leave it at that, is, hey, you guys need to pay attention to what's going on at Mississippi State, and you know, let's not just rest on the fact that Arkansas is always supposed to be really good. It's still going to take continual work to get to that point.
Absolutely. You know, I was watching their BP, and I was watching a guy hit. He was number 2. And I'm like, look at this dude swing. He's crushing the ball. And so I'm assuming, you know, he's one of their everyday starters. And I go around and look, and he's a freshman. Jacob Parker, I think, was his name.
Yeah. He's a big-time guy. He had a twin brother. Like, he and his twin brother actually were big-time draft prospects. The twin went pro, and Jacob went to Mississippi State.
Yeah, I wonder why he ended up at Mississippi State.
Yeah, no.
But, hey, Duke can swing it. And then he ended up getting a start. And, you know, he'd only started like 5 games up to that point. But, I mean, he got a couple of hits against us. They weren't hit hard, but he had a couple of hits. But you can just tell the dude is going to be the real deal. They're going to be good for years to come.
I think they're going to be good this year.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're really good this year.
I think they're going to have a good resume at the end of the season.
I do, too. And I think with the starters all being sophomores, I don't know if any of them are draft eligible. But with 3 of those dudes coming back, and then with the lineup they've got, I mean, they're going to be good. They're back. They're back in the mix.
I was talking earlier on a basketball podcast about John Calipari and Arkansas and how it was, you know, it was the coach and it was the program, and it was just a great match. Boy, it feels like Mississippi State's they found their match with Brian O'Connor.
I think so, and I think they showed how much they wanted him by opening up their checkbook like they did.
$3 million a year.
Paying their assistants to come with him. Yep. You know, brought the assistants, and that's always huge. And that's a huge benefit here. If you look the fact, you know, we got Nate Thompson, Bobby Wernis, Matt Hobbs. They've been with us for a long time. DJ Baxendale's been here. I mean, just the whole support staff, mm-hmm. Clay Goodwin. The fact that we're able to keep that camaraderie together, they all get along, and they all – Dave lets them coach and do their thing. I think that's huge for us. But for a guy to come in like that and be able to bring his assistants and some of his players, mm-hmm. I mean, they made a commitment to him, and it's going to pay off. And, you know, you just kind of wonder. You know, they won a national championship a few years ago, and then they just fell off the map.
It's totally.
And Phil and I have this debate. Would you trade the national championship for, like, 3 years mm-hmm. of irrelevancy, or would you rather be Razorbacks winning 20 SEC games a year, you know, and our resume staying, you know, kind of right here every year at the top. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that.
I would rather win every year.
I would too.
But it's a hard one because, yeah, I mean, it, especially in the, you know, the title culture, everybody all about, you know, oh, you got to win your title. You got to get your ring. You got to get your natty.
You know what sucks? And I don't want to get on my soapbox, but people came to Arkansas because of DVH, the program, the history, the facilities and all that. And I feel like now it's for too many people. Now, we still get a lot of people come here for those reasons. They see the big picture. Look, you know, you look at a lot of the guys we brought in. Hagan Smith comes in. He could have gone and he draft freshman, mm-hmm. stays here, makes $8 or $9 million in a draft. A lot of people are short-sighted. They want the money right then. And so they're mm-hmm. going to go to another school. It's going to give them a little bit more money. They don't see the big picture. If you'll come here, develop, eventually you're going to make $6, $8, $9 million in the draft.
Yeah.
Or you're going to develop and end up in the big leagues. And I wish more people saw that. And I think that, I don't know, I just think that part of the game sucks. And that's the part that's really, it's frustrating mm-hmm. to watch it in action. You know, I feel like it's turning into the name on the back of the jersey instead of the name on the front, other than here at Arkansas and maybe a few other places.
I feel like the developmental aspect of the pitching is something that still is a big draw to Arkansas. And it's something that I think that, you know, boy, it stands out to me, the fact that you got your homegrown guys like Hagan Smith and, you know, to a lesser extent, like a Jackson Wiggins, a Peyton Paulette. Gage Wood last year, mm-hmm. Carson Wiggins. He's probably going to be a really high end draft pick either this year or next. I think they like a lot of these freshmen and their draft potential. And so I do think that there's still that element, and it is something that's attractive, I think, to high school pitchers mm-hmm. who maybe aren't ready right away to get into the draft. But you heard Van Horn talk about it the other day. It reminds me of this. It's slightly off topic, but he said, you know, we've been having this conversation about it's kind of some of the struggles that some of the hitters had had. I think he said this before the series. He said, you know, it's made us think about that whole, do you recruit high school players or do you recruit college transfers?
And right.
It's so hard to find the right balance in baseball.
I mean, it's hard to get the college transfers because they're all after the money.
Yeah, especially high end.
Yeah, where you said your point about the freshman pitchers, I think Hobbs can get the freshman pitchers in here because of his track record.
I mean, who wouldn't? You know, like, if you see what I know Hagan Smith was a big-time prospect. Gage Wood is really the one, I think, who's like the prototype that you want to use right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gage Wood was not a big-time pitching prospect when he came to Arkansas. I think that everybody saw that there was a lot of raw – tools there, but man, when you look at like Hagan took a big jump from year one to year three, Gage took a massive jump from year one to year three, and I think there are probably some others that have come through the program too that would be, you know, in that similar conversation. But
I look at Zach Root when I first saw Zach Root pitch last year, I'm like, ooh, I don't think he can be a Friday guy, and by the end of the year, he's shoving. I
mean,
he's
first rounder.
I mean, he's crazy. The from the fall to June, mm-hmm. seeing him develop. I mean, hopefully guys see that.
Yeah.
I know everyone wants the money right now, but boy, that money will be there down the road.
I think between Missouri, Wake Forest, Arkansas, maybe one other stop in there, Hobbs has got somewhere like I think 9-10 first round draft picks who he's either, you know, recruited and or coached at some point in time. It's pretty impressive. I know the teams know him. Like the professional baseball teams, they know him. Mm-hmm. A few of them tried to hire him.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of big time colleges have tried to lure him away. And I think Arkansas is really fortunate in what they have with Matt Hobbs. Yeah. And the development, again, because it's not a lot of, you know, it's hitting. There are a lot of transfers. Pitching, not more than about two or three a year.
Yeah. What I love about Matt, and I've said this, I've even said this to him, I love how he can break down pitching, which is very complex. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moving parts.
And articulate it.
He can articulate it to where just your average person can understand it.
Even I can get it.
Yeah, and I think he's got to do that because we give some of these high school guys, they may not know that much. So if you start using – he could wow you with a bunch of big words, mm-hmm. you know, and all the fancy terminology that you probably see
sometimes
on YouTube.
Sometimes he does.
Or he can just say it in a simple way where everyone gets it, and his mm-hmm. players get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most important part is – you can be the smartest man in the room, but if no one understands what you're trying to teach them, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. All right, Bubba, appreciate you being here. Once again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto, proudly family-owned since 1976. Trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. Learn more or schedule service at hrtireandauto.com. Bubba will be back in here on Thursday. We'll look back at the Northern Colorado midweek and ahead to the weekend series against South Carolina. Hope to see you then or at our website, wholehogsports.com.